ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। खालाय खालनाभाय,
खालाय खालनाभाय,
खालावय वसाक्षिणे,
खालावय वसाक्षिणे,
विषाय तदुपद्रष्ट्रे,
विषाय तदुपद्रष्ट्रे,
तक्षक तत्कर्त्रे विश्वहेतवे,
तत्कर्त्रे विश्वहेतवे।
Obeisances unto you, who are time itself, the shelter of time, and the witness of time in all its phases. You are the universe, and also its separate observer. You are its creator, and also the totality of all its causes. Purport. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, although appearing in different incarnations, can never be limited by time, since he is time itself, the shelter of time, and the witness of time in all its phases. Obeisances unto you, who are time itself, the shelter of time, the witness of time in all its phases. You are the universe and also its separate observer. You are its creator and also the totality of all its causes. This morning we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 16, entitled Krishna Chastises the Serpent Kaliya. Text 41. The wives of Kaliya, the Nagapatnis, are appealing to Krishna to show mercy unto the brutal, cruel, abusive husband that they lived with for so long. In today's verse, they are especially appreciating Krishna as the very cause of time. He's the creator of time. He's the witness of time. He manifests himself through his own energies as the entire creation, which is under the control of time. And yet he remains separate from all of the creation as the observer of time. He's the cause of all causes, without beginning, without end. And with this understanding, they are putting the dilemma, not only of Kaliya, but of all conditioned souls within this world, in its proper perspective. Krishna tells in Gita, Aham Bija Pratapita, that he is the seed-giving mother and father of all living beings. Samoham Sarva Bhuteshu. And therefore, the Lord is equal to everyone. The Lord gives everyone what's best for them. And when Krishna appears, either directly or through the agency of material nature, to be punishing someone, it's ultimately for their good. But when we are completely entangled in the material conception of life due to the ahankar, or the false ego, we consider the situation, the tiny little lifetime we're in, to be the all in all. Unless we see the bigger perspective, we can easily be bewildered, confused, and lose faith. But the purpose of Bhagavad Gita, of all these great scriptures and all the saints, is to help us to see everything that may happen in relationship to the unlimited broader picture of reality, in which we are of that nature, of that identity. Mamaivam so jivaloke jivabhuta sanatana. Krishna tells that all living beings are my eternal part and parcels. Achintya beda beda. Simultaneously one with me, every living being, wherever there's life, whether it be a bacteria or whether it be a demigod like Brahma, wherever there's life among the fish, the plants and vegetation, insects, reptiles, birds, beasts, humans, rakshasas, asuras, suras, demigods. That spark of life is Satchidananda, eternal, full of knowledge, full of bliss. And the natural propensity to love Krishna and to experience Krishna's unlimited love is the inherent potential that is within all of us. And while living in this material world, like everything, our bodies, our minds, are subjected to the influence of time. From that perspective, it really doesn't make so much difference whether we live a long life or a short life, whether we are happy or whether we suffer on this material plane, because everything is constantly vanishing. That is the mystical nature of time. All that exists is the present moment, and yet the present moment disappears as soon as it appears. You can't hold on to a single second. You can stop the clock, but it's not going to prevent you from getting old. How incredible. The most powerful force in all of creation is time. As we're sitting here, time is in the process of extinguishing the sun, drying up every ocean, pulverizing all the planets, and what to speak of our little bodies. Moment by moment, we are on a journey from a material perspective, an ever progressive journey to death. The Srimad Bhagavatam tells, with every rising and setting of the sun, those who do not see the higher picture, they are one day closer to death. but for one who understands the supreme controller of time and our relationship beyond time, and who hear and chant the glories of Krishna, the supreme mother, father, and object of everyone's love. With every rising and setting of the sun, we come one day closer to eternal life. When we see from this perspective, then yes, we can understand how Krishna is Suhridam Sarvabhutanam. He's the ever-existing, supreme loving well-wisher of every living being. Punishment is an expression of Krishna's love. Reward is an expression of Krishna's love. And if we see from the whole picture, we can understand that. Otherwise, we just get caught up in the moment and think, why is this happening to me? It's not fair. But little children think about that in their own little way about their parents. If a child is doing mischief, which is not good for it, for the child, and could actually spoil the consciousness of and spoil the future of the child, even dangerous things, when the parent tries to stop the child, usually the child thinks it isn't fair. Why are you doing this to me? But that's the way we all are. When things don't go our way, and through material nature, there's some sort of difficulty, why are you doing this to me? But Krishna, not only is he controlling everything through time, but he's controlling time and everything within the cosmic manifestation in such a way that's ultimately good for everyone. And what is the context in which the Nagapatnis are offering this prayer? To see how Krishna has causelessly given such mercy to their husband. In brief, this story takes place on the birthday of Lord Balaram. Usually, Krishna and Balaram would go out together to herd the cows. But on this day, because it was his appearance day, Balaram was kept in the village of Braj. His mother, Rohini Devi, and his other mother and father, Nanda and Yashoda, they kept him back to give him auspicious baths and to have him give charity to Brahmins and saintly people, to invoke auspiciousness upon him. So Krishna took this opportunity to herd his cows toward a lake that was connected to the Yamuna River. The cows, they were very thirsty. It was a very hot day in that sense. So when they saw the water of the lake, they began to drink it. They fell dead because the water was highly concentrated with poison. Meanwhile, the little cowherd boys, they loved their cows dearly. They couldn't tolerate seeing their cows dead. How could they live? So they also drank the water, and they all fell on the bank dead. When Krishna saw this, his beloved cows and all of his beloved friends unconscious in this state, tears filled his eyes, and he glanced upon them. And with that tear-filled, compassionate glance, he brought all the cows and all the boys back to life. They were so happy. They had some understanding of what happened. And they were so filled with gratitude and love for Krishna. And Krishna was filled with such affection for them. Because sometimes these disasters bring people even closer. Sometimes hard times among loved ones gives them a deeper appreciation for what we mean to each other. So there were so many cowherd boys and so many cows. And each one came to Krishna. And each cowherd boy Krishna embraced. Krishna was crying, the cowherd boys were crying. And each cow, Krishna put his arm around them and whispered nice words in their ears and embraced them. Now, how is it possible that Krishna could embrace every cow and embrace and speak sweet words to every boy? That is the unlimited nature of Krishna, who is Ras Bihari. He has unlimited capacity to exchange love infinitely with everyone at all times simultaneously. God is great. God's greatness is sometimes calculated by how he creates, maintains, destroys the material creation. If someone can create some updates for computers, they're considered very great. But Krishna's created the entire universe, and simultaneously to one universe, he has created unlimited universes. It's not that he has some organizational development plan, one universe at a time. He just exhales while he's sleeping. And quadrillions of universes are simultaneously created, with all the intricacies, the 25 elements, earth, water, fire, air, ether, sky, the mind, the intelligence, the ego, the five objects of the senses, sight, taste, touch, sound, smell, the five working senses, the tongue and the arms and the legs and the genital organ and the evacuation organs, the three modes of material nature which activates all these elements, Rajaguna, Tamaguna, Sattvaguna, the Pradhana, the spiritual force which is manifesting the entire creation of everything in material existence. How is he doing it? Just by his will. And all the mountains, all the oceans, the sun. The sun is so many millions of times bigger than the earth. Nobody's putting coal or fuel. There's no gas lines from the Middle East keeping the sun fuel to burn. Because as we know it, you can't have fire or light without fuel. Where is the sun getting its fuel from? And it's not like every day it's getting a little smaller. It stays the same size. It stays the same size until it's time to just go out. It's not like at the end of Brahma's days, the sun is just like a little speck. It remains as it is. Inconceivable. Who's doing it? How is it being done? Scientifically, they may have certain explanations of gas and all of this stuff, but who's making it work that way? It's more intricate than anything we have ever, that humans could ever conceive of. And all the planets, they're all in their orbits, and all living beings within the planets. You know, we have our DNAs and all of this, but who has created it? What is that force that causes a male lizard to be so attracted to a female lizard? It's quite inconceivable. How many of us are attracted to a lizard of the opposite sex? But how many lizards are attracted to humans of the opposite sex? So everything is so relative. Each species has an irresistible attraction to have pleasure with a companion of their own species. Even mosquitoes. Yes? You may laugh, but at one time in cosmic history, you were probably doing what the mosquitoes were. How creation is working is inconceivable. But what we read from Srimad Bhagavatam, this is an insignificant aspect of God's greatness. The actual greatness of God is Rasa Bihari, Gopinath, Giridhari, Vrindavan Chandra, Shamsundar and Madhava, Madan Mohan, Damodar. All of these names of the Lord are appreciating his unlimited potency to give love and receive love. Therefore, even if there are millions of cows, Krishna can embrace every one of them. And it's not that they're all standing in queue. And some are in the back of the queue, the line, thinking, oh, when will I... It would take years to get to the front of the queue. What to speak of all the boys? And what to speak of, you know, because Vrindavan, it's a spiritual world, but it's also part of India. So what kind of queue that would be? we see how people in your country, in our country, how they do so many things to get to the front of the line. Just to get a railway ticket. Or to get on a third class or second class train. Whatever it may be. Could you imagine to be embraced by Krishna? But there's no lines. Krishna simultaneously can embrace everyone at the same time. Now, how is it possible? Now we're going to go into some details of what achintya or inconceivable means. In one sense, Krishna can expand himself. And when he expands himself, every expansion could be his original self. He can expand himself to be with each and every cow and each and every boy simultaneously. In such a way that every cow and every gopa is thinking Krishna's only embracing me. Of all these others. And they don't become proud. They're not thinking, oh, I'm better than you, just see Krishna's. They're just so absorbed in their gratitude to Krishna and their love for Krishna. They're so inundated by Krishna's love for them, they just don't even notice. That relationship is so deep, they can't even notice that Krishna's doing the same thing to everyone. That's one way in which Krishna could embrace all simultaneously. But if Krishna wants to, he doesn't even have to expand himself. That one form, not some invisible energy, that one form of Krishna can simultaneously embrace and speak the name of all of his friends and cows. Is that conceivable? On one sense, to expand yourself unlimitedly and each form is the original form, that's inconceivable. And to not expand yourself, just to spend simultaneously be embracing each one? How is it possible? It's not possible. That is Krishna's greatness. Achintya means that Krishna's power to reciprocate with the love of his devotee is beyond comprehension. And within this world, his infinite love, he is Sarvasya Chaham Hridishanivishto. He simultaneously within the heart of every one of us. He knows our every desire. He knows everything we say, everything we do, everything we've ever said, thought, or done. Never forgets. That's love. Considering many of the things we may have done in this life, in past lives. In this world, we say forgive and forget. Yes, but Krishna never forgets. But he forgives. Because we are his beloved. Every one of us. And Krishna's controlling time within this cosmic manifestation, and it's all ultimately meant to help us to revive and restore our love for him. And if we see within these tiny, insignificant little lifetimes we have in perspective of eternity, in this light, then our whole vision of reality transforms. And So after satisfying all of his intimate friends, he decided to... He was actually very angry at Kaliya. Because according to Srila Jiva Goswami, Kaliya had poisoned that lake long before. And Krishna was telling his friends, just see what this serpent has done. This lake is so poisonous. Just the hissing of Kaliya exhumed, manifested so much poison that it was intolerable for anyone to live. Yes. Just psss. Of course, he was louder than that. But I just did it. What happened? Nothing. You laughed. Some of you laughed. When Kaliya goes, volumes and volumes of poisons come out. The lake was so polluted that any bird that flew overhead, just by the vapors, even the big birds that were flying way, way, way up in the sky, the vapors, they would immediately drop dead. Nothing could live. There was only one tree that was alive. All other vegetation was dead. That was a Kadamba tree. Because Garuda, in a little hole on the top of that Kadamba tree, he deposited some nectar, Amrit. Because with his vision, he understood that Krishna was going to come there. And he wanted that tree there for Krishna. Jiva Goswami explains that Krishna would have liberated Kaliya long before. But because of Kaliya's wives, the Nagapatnis, who were very virtuous, very pure in heart, and completely devoted to Krishna, Krishna was shy to do anything in their presence. But now that he saw that Kaliya actually murdered all his friends and cows before he brought them back to life, Krishna became angry. And he climbed that Kadamba tree and tightened his belt. When Krishna tightens his belt, it's a very serious subject. If Krishna really wanted to insult a demon, he wouldn't even bother tightening his belt. But this was a serious matter. He tightened it to show he was about to really get involved. And then he jumped in the water. This water was so polluted. We were explaining, no life could exist anywhere near it. Krishna jumped right in. And although Krishna was just a little boy, when he jumped from the branch of this Kadamba tree, he made a massive splash. If he was the hugest of the celestial elephants diving in, it wouldn't be a splash like this. Krishna's, according to his will, he could be the biggest of the big. He can be the Virat Rupa, where all the universes are just manifesting. He could be Mahavishnu, or he could be Paramatma. The soul is 1/10,000th the size of a tip of a hair. That's inconceivable. As long as we're in this material existence, that is the limit of our significance. Hare Krishna. whether you're president, prime minister, world champion, cricket player, whatever you may be, you're 1/10,000th the size of the tip of a hair. So sometime today, just, you know, pull out one of your hairs and really, and examine the tip of it. Try to measure it. Now that's insignificant. If someone were to say you are the size of the tip of a hair, that is your significance, that's an insult. But 1/10,000th the size. Can we even calculate 10,000? Kumbh Mela, you could calculate it. That many people are bathing in this. In a spot that's about, you know, 1 meter in size. So Krishna, he is seeing Kaliya from this perspective. And when he jumps in, Krishna is, he can be heavier than the heaviest or lighter than the lightest. Earlier when he was a little baby, Mother Yashoda, she was playing with Krishna. He was just 1 year old. It's just about the time of his first birthday. And Yashoda Maya had Krishna on her lap and she would throw him into this air. And Krishna would, while he was in the sky, he would be laughing and smiling, and Yashoda would catch him. And then she would throw him up again and catch him. So he's so light. But then when Trinavarta came, he became heavier than the greatest of mountains. So little Krishna, so small. His limbs were so beautiful and so sweet and so graceful. He jumped in and the whole lake was in a tumultuous state. Then he was swimming around. And with his beautiful little arms, he was swishing the water, making these massive waves. Kaliya was underneath. This was unbearable. You see, even in this world, people, when they have strong attachment to their property, they don't like trespassers. Yes. Unless you're invited, you cannot come. So many countries, there's gates around your house, and it says, beware of dogs. And then you, as soon as you get near, you hear these dogs are screaming just to make you understand you are not wanted. And other people, they have these big signs that we have, you know, this particular company of security devices, and everything that happens here is you know, if you open a window, if you open a gate, if you try to climb over the fence, these lasers detect that somebody's there. And it sends immediate alarm to the police station. They have these in America. They may have in India, I don't know. Where if you go onto somebody's property, if you're not home, doesn't matter if you're home or not, immediately, there's an alarm and it goes to the police station and the police immediately come to get you. Hare Krishna. So security. So Kaliya, his ego was uncontrollably agitated because nobody could possibly live in this lake that was so highly poisoned. And here someone was swimming around and playing and laughing. Krishna was laughing. So he came forward. He had 1,000 hoods. He was a massive snake. He wasn't like these little snakes that we see today. He was... Who can understand how big he was? He was bigger than all the high-rises of Mumbai. And he had razor-sharp, shining white fangs that were massive. And all of his tongues that were bifurcated in two parts were slithering in and out. And all of his eyes stared at Krishna with hatred and wrath. And he bit Krishna. Then tied up Krishna within his coils. And Krishna was just happily within the coils of Kaliya. And Kaliya was squeezing, and his coils were extremely strong. He was squeezing Krishna, and Krishna was smiling. But how much this excited the love of his devotees. The cows were looking at Krishna, the cowherd boys were looking at Krishna, and the cowherd boys, they couldn't tolerate seeing Krishna in that state. They knew they were totally helpless against this massive serpent, but they couldn't just stand by and watch. So they all ran to jump in the lake, even though they knew if they jumped in the lake, they would all die. But when the cowherd boys saw that the cows were following them, and knowing how much Krishna loved the cows, they stopped. And all they could do was look up at Krishna in this condition. Because by Krishna's yogamaya potency, they were not seeing him as the all-powerful God. They were seeing him as their loving friend. Their love increased in the pain. We can never calculate the pain that they were experiencing seeing Krishna in that state. When we love our child, our brothers, our sisters, our parents, when we see them in terrible condition, how much pain it causes our hearts. Because according, if you really don't care about somebody, it doesn't hurt so much when they're suffering. But if you really love somebody, to the degree you love them, it hurts when they're suffering. And the cows and the gopas, their love for Krishna is unlimited. So what was their pain? Why did Krishna do that to them? Why did he remain in the coils? Because that pain was actually increasing their love. Even though their love was unlimited and beyond any capacity to increase, still it was increasing. Rasa Vihari. And because Krishna's immortal and Krishna's forever within the heart of every living being, when we feel pain for Krishna, that pain is a form of ecstasy. Because it so much stimulates love. Meanwhile, the cows and the gopas, they were paralyzed. They couldn't walk, they couldn't talk. All they could do is just see Krishna in that state. So how to somehow or other inform all the other inhabitants of Braj Bhumi, the devas, in seeing this, they created all sorts of inauspiciousness. And meanwhile, at Nanda Maharaj's house, in his assembly room, there was a big feast in honor of Balaram, because it was his birthday. And Balaram was there, and it was a wonderful prepared, and all the Brijabasis were dressed very nicely to come, and they were all like taking the prasad and happy, and Balaram's birthday, it's such a good celebration. And suddenly they saw all inauspiciousness everywhere around them. And what was their first thought? Krishna. Not only their first thought, not only their last thought, not only their middle thought, their only thought. That's love. Krishna. Something must be happening to Krishna. And they were in so much anxiety. They went out to the pasture and they saw Krishna's little footprints in the sands of Brajbhumi, and they were following those footprints. And as they were following, they were so much worried about Krishna. They were trying to go as fast as they could, but they were going so slow. Sometimes Yashoda Mai, Nanda Maharaj, they were rushing as far as they could, but they could hardly move. Their limbs were practically paralyzed, worrying about Krishna. Sometimes falling unconscious, sometimes going as all these inauspicious omens were manifesting all around them. And Balaram, he knew that nothing can harm his brother. But he didn't say anything. And ultimately they arrived at the riverbank. And they saw all the cows and all the gopa boys standing like statues with tears pouring from their eyes. And then they looked up and they saw Kaliya with his coils wrapped around Gopal. Immediately, Yashoda Mai, Nanda Maharaj, Rohini, everyone, spontaneously, they all ran to jump into the lake. If by jumping in they could help Krishna in any way, that was their only concern in life. And if they couldn't help Krishna, let them die. Let us die. That was their feeling. And Balaram, he put his arms out and stopped everyone from going into the poisonous lake. And he was smiling. Even though he was seeing Krishna like that, there was all sorts of emotions in him. But he laughed. He thought to himself, and he kind of whispered to Krishna, "As Sheshanaga, you never play with me like this." But now you are playing with this insignificant little water snake named Kaliya. Krishna remained in that condition to increase the ecstasy of the love of all the devotees. Vatsalya bhav, sakya bhav, madhurya bhav, dasya bhav. Everybody, according to their loving relationship with Krishna, their hearts were churning with feelings. And when Krishna saw that they were all practically on the verge of death, it describes Yashoda Mai, she fell unconscious like a cow that had just lost her calf. Krishna expanded his body slightly, then he slipped out of the coils. And Kaliya, seeing this, attacked with his fangs to devour Krishna. But Krishna, with one hand, pushed one of his hoods down and jumped on top. and danced. How he danced. Kali had 1,000 hoods. All his 1,000 hoods were trying to get Krishna. It's not like if you're on one hood, then you... All his other hoods were trying to get Krishna on another hood, and he was dancing. He danced so nicely, so beautifully, so sweetly. It was like a stage for Krishna to perform, and he was smiling. And he was dancing in such a way that Lord Shiva began to play his drum. Have you ever heard Shiva play his drum? He's the best of drummers. Can you imagine Shiva playing the drum? It's like in Mayapur, we had our Mayapur Academy and Guru Kulis. They were all playing their drums, and everyone was mystified as they were playing mridangas together. But when Shiva plays his drum, and the demigods of the Gandharvas were playing their drums as well, and playing all sorts of musical instruments, and Krishna, in perfect rhythm, was dancing. The most extraordinary dance that the world has ever seen. And as he was dancing, sometimes he would jump up into the sky. He would just jump, and everyone was seeing. And he would come down in a pose, perfect pose. So graceful. And serpents' heads are very slippery. And Krishna, his bare feet danced. And although those feet were so soft, when Krishna would go out to herd the cows, the gopis would think about how soft Krishna's feet were and how those feet may step on a pebble and it could cause him so much pain. Because Krishna's lotus feet were so tender that if Yashoda, Nanda, any gopa gopi, if they touched his feet, it would change colors. How many of your feet are so tender? You just go like this, just touch, and it would be so soft, so soft. You'd think if you touched Krishna's feet with your finger, you would think, I must be causing him pain because my finger's so hard compared to his feet. And the gopis, they considered the very, very softest part of their body to be like solid rocks compared to the softness of touching Krishna's feet. Yeyata mam prapadyante tams tadaiva bhajamyam. Because Krishna reciprocates according to how we approach him. Because the Brijabasis approached him with such love, his lotus feet and every limb of his body was softer, more fragrant than a newly blossomed lotus. But for Kaliya, those same feet made Indra's thunderbolts insignificant. Now we have seen what a thunderbolt could do, just an ordinary thunderbolt. If it hit something, can destroy it. Indra's thunderbolt is millions of times greater than just the thunderbolts during the monsoons in Mumbai. For Kaliya, each one of his beautiful dancing steps was like a thunderbolt crashing into his head. And he was doing so many varieties of steps. Every dance that has ever been created was included in its perfected, pure state in Krishna's dance. Sometimes, as I said, he would leap into the air, into the sky, and then come down to everyone else, he came down like, but to Kali, it was. And at other times, he would do really fast steps, like faster than we can ever calculate. If Krishna wants to do a fast step, your eyes can't even see how his. But for Kali, every one of those fast little steps was thunderbolts. And he was trying with all of his powers to destroy Krishna. And the Brijabasi saw that sometimes in Krishna's dance, not only was he dancing on their heads, but the Brijabasi saw sometimes in his dance, he would jump right into one of Kaliya's mouths. And before Kaliya could close it, he would jump out dancing. And he danced and danced until that particular hood was totally exhausted. And the hood would just collapse. And Krishna would jump on another hood and dance, Kaliya Krishna, until that hood collapsed. And he did that again and again and again. And all the Brijabasis were looking. It was just so extraordinary. In one sense, Krishna was fighting with this massive serpent, and he was just their little boy. In another sense, it was such a celebration. Can you imagine the music? What a concert that is. Shiva's playing the drum. Brahma was showering flowers. The Gandharvas, the Apsaras were singing. The ultimate concert of all concerts. And Krishna was dancing. So for the Brijabasis seeing this, their hearts were filled with joy. But at the same time, their hearts were filled with worry. And Krishna was smiling upon them. Don't worry. He danced and danced until all the poison of Kaliya's entire body started pouring out of his mouth. He was actually vomiting poison until there was no poison left in him. Then he started vomiting blood. And actually, it was beautiful. Krishna was dancing. Ultimately, the last of Kaliya's hoods collapsed. And at that point, Kaliya realized that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It took this much for him to come to his senses. He was beaten down so much that literally, you see, it wasn't just his heads, it wasn't just his hoods, and it wasn't just his poison. That was, in one sense, the easy part. Physical pain doesn't go as deep as emotional pain. Kaliya was not only brutal and cruel, but he was the personification of false ego. Because he had so much power, because he had such immense treasures, because of his powers, because everybody was so afraid of him, and nobody could be his rival, you cannot be more arrogant than Kaliya was. He had practically unlimited mountain of arrogance in him. And as everyone was watching, He was fighting with Krishna with all his might. And Krishna was laughing and smiling. And he defeated him by dancing. That's quite humiliating. Yes, you know, if Krishna just started taking weapons to fight him, then it's like a chivalrous kshatriya battle, even if you lose. But Krishna was showing him no significance whatsoever. Kaliya was fighting like the most ferocious warrior, and Krishna was smiling and singing and dancing. And in doing so, Kaliya, along with his hoods, his ego completely collapsed. It was crushed. He realized he was totally insignificant. He was absolutely helpless, and there was nothing he could do about it, and nothing anyone could do about it for him. In that state, he became genuinely humble. And only in that egoless humility could he recognize that Krishna is my beloved Lord. He took shelter of Narayan to save him. At that moment, the Nagapatnis, the wives of Kaliya, emerged from the lake. According to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, when Krishna was dancing on Kaliya's hoods and he was about to die, the wives were saying, "Very good. He's so cruel. He's such a demon. He's caused so much pain to so many others. We would always tell him what he should do, but he would never listen because he was so proud. Now Krishna's so kind. He's giving him what he deserves. Let him die." Then, without restriction, we could be widows and completely take shelter of Krishna and chant his holy names. It's been so long since I've been here, I forgot that you like that you like to do like that. But when they saw Kaliya actually, from his heart of hearts, was humbling himself before God, they were genuinely, deeply his well-wisher. When they were thinking, "Let him die," they were thinking that this is his only hope. Krishna's dancing on his heads and he's going to die like this. He's going to be liberated. This is the best possible thing. That was their compassion. But when they saw how he was humbling himself, they approached Krishna and they put all their sons and daughters, Kaliya's children, in front of them. It doesn't describe what they looked like or anything. But it appears that they were very sweet little children. Not because of Kaliya, but because of the wives. Because they were so sweet, they were so devoted, they were so pure in heart. And they folded their palms with tears of love, offering prayers to Krishna. And what are these prayers? They're praying how they're offering obeisances to Krishna. And they're glorifying Krishna's compassion. The punishment that this offender has been subjected to is certainly just. Whatever you're doing for him is perfect. After all, you have incarnated in this world to curb envious and cruel people. And you are so impartial that you look upon everyone, your enemies and your own sons, with equal vision. And whatever you do for anyone, it is always for their ultimate benefit. Whether we're being empowered and exalted or whether we're being punished, apparently, it's always for our ultimate benefit. If only we could see the whole picture. And essentially, the whole picture, it's not that we have to understand all the intricacies of all the karmas that we have performed in all of our previous lives and this lives to understand why is this coming back to me. That's one way of understanding the justice of material nature and God. But for the Nagapatnis, it wasn't about that. When we understand how Krishna is Suhridam Sarvabhutanam, he is the intimate, most loving, well-wishing friend of all living beings. Understanding the nature of God's infinite, inconceivable love is all we really have to know. We have to see everything that happens in creation through the lens of Krishna's love for all living beings. Whoever we are, whatever we have done, Krishna's love never diminishes. But how he expresses our love, his love, is what is for our ultimate benefit. Because we cannot really reciprocate love with Krishna until we free ourselves of this arrogance, of this wanting to be the Lord of all we survey. So the Nagapatnis are praising Krishna in this way. Whatever you do is for everyone's ultimate benefit. And Krishna, you know, nobody else could know what is ultimately for the benefit of all your loving children. And what you have done is so extraordinary. It's such mercy. Since the punishment you give to the wicked certainly drives away all their contamination, indeed, because this conditioned soul, our husband, is so sinful that he has assumed the body of a serpent, your anger toward him is obvious. Obviously to be understood as your mercy. And then they're wondering, how is it possible that he has such a benediction? Did he perform incredible pious activities in his past lives that entitled him to be the dancing stage for your dance? Your feet are so sacred that the goddess of fortune performs long times of austerities just to see your lotus feet, or to speak of touch them and serve them. And you, those same lotus feet have been dancing on the head of our husband, and all of your footprints are still there on his feet. There is no possible quantity of pious activities that could ever deserve that blessing. So the Nagapatnis their only conclusion. It wasn't due to his piousness of past lives. It's only due to your causeless mercy. And then the Nagapatnis, in the mood of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Shikshastakam prayers, they're praying that those who have attained the dust of your feet, they never hanker. They never have the slightest bit of desire for all the wealth and opulences of Indra, the King of Heaven. They do not want the luxuries, the sensual enjoyments of the heavenly planets. They have no inclination whatsoever to power and control over property or people. They have no inclination toward followers to control. They have no desire even to have the post of Brahma. Nor do they have the slightest inclination for all the mystic cities, the supernatural, miraculous powers of the yoga system. Nor do they care anything for liberation, cessation of all suffering forever. Kaliya, who is the king of serpents, he took birth in the mode of ignorance. And therefore, he's naturally acting like an ignorant person. Embodied souls who are full of desires and are thus wandering in the cycle of birth and death can have all benedictions manifested before their eyes simply by receiving the dust of your lotus feet. So they are praising the good fortune of Kaliya and offering their sincerest, deepest gratitude to Krishna for punishing him in this way. Because they could see, because of their divine vision, they could see that the punishment was the greatest blessing. And now they are saying to Krishna, but look, Kaliya has now humbled himself. And it would have taken nothing less than this to get him to humble himself. Now he's taking shelter of you. Please give him shelter. It was these prayers that softened Krishna's heart so much. After hearing the prayers of the Nagapatnis, prayers of compassion, prayers of forgiveness, prayers of mercy, Krishna looked upon Kaliya with great affection. And Kaliya bowed his head with folded hands. I don't know if he had hands, actually. But if he did, he bowed. He didn't have hands, actually. But he bowed his head with complete humility and surrendered his heart. So tomorrow morning we'll continue our discussion of this, to discuss so many of the priceless, incredible lessons of this story. Because in one sense, Kaliya represents every single one of us. We have this poison within us, the poison of envy. And through that envy, it manifests as greed, lust, selfish lust, anger, arrogance, and so much illusion. And the situations of this material world are actually all, in one sense, Krishna's dance. the good times, the hard times. We could see it as Krishna's dance to ultimately purify us. It's not that Kaliya was thinking while Krishna was dancing, oh, I'm becoming purified. He was resisting, he was fighting against it, he didn't like it, he was ashamed, he was mortified, he was humiliated. But ultimately, by the prayers of his wives, he understood. And similarly, in the association of devotees, we can understand how Krishna's mercy is manifested in various ways in our lives. Without that association, we are certain to be bewildered, like Kaliya. The importance of having the blessings and the prayers of great souls. Trinadapi sunichena taror ibasi ishnana. Amani namaradena kirtaniya sadari. Through Krishna's punishment and through the Nagapatni's prayers, Kaliya actually realized this verse. He became more humble than a blade of grass, more tolerant than a tree, ready to offer all respect to others and honor everyone without expectation for oneself. He surrendered. That is the condition of all of us. Krishna has appeared in his name. When we chant the holy names of Krishna, Rupa Goswami says, Krishna is dancing on our tongue. And sometimes our tongue is like a snake, too. It kind of moves around like that. And sometimes it's very greedy and very envious. The tongue is really a snake-like instrument if it's not controlled properly. It's greedy to taste more and more and more foods. And when we're envious, how does our envy usually come out? By our speech. Fault-finding, criticizing, blasphemy, whatever it may be. It's Kaliya. It's like Kaliya is manifesting in our tongue, and all these poisons are coming out. And we poison everything around us. But when we chant the holy names, like that one Brahmin, he came to Lord Chaitanya at Kuliagram and said, I have criticized your devotees so much. What should I do? Lord Chaitanya said, when you criticize others, it is like drinking poison with your mouth. It's going to destroy you. But when you praise Krishna by chanting his holy names, it is like drinking, and by praising the Lord's devotees, it is drinking nectar. That amrita, that nectar, is the only power that can neutralize the poison of our speaking with envy and arrogance. Kirtaniya sadadi. At one point, Lord Chaitanya said, do two things, I will take you back to Godhead. Always chant the holy names and do not criticize others. Just do that. And that's all about the tongue, yes? Jive pelebi sayasagore. The tongue is very instrumental. It can be the cause of our downfall or our liberation. Jive piba swamrita mata deva govinda damodara madhaveti. The gopis prayed like this. They would pray to their tongue, my dear tongue, please constantly taste the sweetness of Krishna's names and pastimes. and qualities. And another very important lesson in this story is an ecological message that we shouldn't pollute the river Yamuna. And today there was a march with almost 500,000 people from Vrindavan to Delhi to demonstrate against the pollution of Yamuna. In Haryana, the government with a dam diverts every drop of Yamuna water to the agricultural fields. And there's miles and miles of miles of nothing but empty riverbed. Every now and then they let a little flow through. And in Delhi, poison, sewage, and industrial waste is poured into the river. And that's what flows to Vrindavan, Krishna's land. So humanity has actually, following in the footsteps of Kaliya, totally polluting Krishna's rivers, Yamuna. There's practically no life that could exist in Yamuna. And so many Brijavasis and other pilgrims, they become extremely sick, even with terminal diseases, just by drinking the water, bathing, cooking with Yamuna water. It's not the Yamuna. It's poison. But Krishna, it describes after Kaliya surrendered to Krishna, his wives brought him all sorts of gifts for Krishna. And he had so many gifts. He offered Krishna beautiful jewels, garlands. Krishna had, the whole time Krishna was dancing, according to my understanding, he had a kadamba flower garland on him from that kadamba tree. He was still wearing his kadamba flower garland. And they were giving him garlands and silks and jewels and gold and offering everything to Krishna. And then Krishna told Kaliya that now you should leave this place. And I know you're afraid of Garuda and this is the only place you're safe. But when Garuda sees my footprints on your head, he will offer you all honor and respect. Have no fear. Bajahure mana srinandanandana abhaya charanaravindare. When we take shelter of Krishna, we have nothing to fear. When we put the dust of Krishna's feet on our head, which means when we accept ourselves as his eternal servant, and Sharanagati, surrender in this way, then there's nothing to fear. Manaso deho geho jo kichu mor. Everything belongs to Krishna. Krishna, whatever you want to do with me is perfect. I'm your servant. That is Sharanagati. Surrender. Sweet surrender. So Krishna said, you go, take your family. They went to Ramanaka Island. And then Krishna came out of the water. He was there for a long time. And when he came out of the water, he made the entire Yamuna River absolutely pure, transparent, like nectar. In other words, Krishna turned a total ecological disaster into a pure natural paradise. So that's Krishna's feelings. And this is how devotees should also. We are meant all to serve Krishna's interests. we should clean the pollution within our hearts by hearing and chanting and living pure lives. And we should also try to purify the pollution in other people's hearts and purify the pollutions of Krishna's abodes. These are a few thoughts on today's verse. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Hari Hari.